This is a podcast from WILL AM 580. To support our station, please visit www.willpledge.org. That's www.willpledge.org.
This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Thursday, September 20th. I'm Jeff Bossert. Coming up, the next in our series, World War II Central Illinois Stories. Earlier this week, Tom Rogers reported on a German prisoner of war camp in Hoopston, Illinois. Today, we hear from a retired farmer, an American serviceman who experienced prison life on the other side. We'll also have a look at your AM 580 weather forecast for Champaign-Urbana, but first, a look at today's news. The possibility of opening a casino in Danville is the reason cited by State Senator Mike Frerichs for supporting a gaming expansion bill. The measure passed by the Illinois Senate Tuesday night would permit a new land-based casino in Chicago and two new riverboat casinos elsewhere in the state. Frerichs says a lot of people in Danville hope one of those riverboat casinos comes to their town.
I had a lot of constituents from the Danville area and even throughout Vermilion County contact me saying they'd like to have a chance at a casino. Really what they would have liked to have had was the Honda factory, like to have Dollar General, but they want something that's going to produce jobs for the region.
Frerichs says he's never been a big casino supporter himself, but can't ignore the backing a casino has in the Danville area. Plus, the Gifford Democrat says he doesn't see any politically viable alternatives for raising money to pay for state infrastructure projects such as roads and schools. Republican State Senator Dale Ryder of Mattoon also voted for the gaming bill, while Pontiac Republican Dan Rutherford voted against it. Frerichs says he expects the gaming bill to come to the Illinois House during the fall veto session, but he thinks it will first be modified by legislative leaders. Two state of Illinois workers accused of job rigging will be able to keep their jobs. A judge ruled last month the pair could return to the state's payroll, and the governor won't appeal that decision. Sean Crawford reports.
It's a quiet conclusion to a case that Governor Rod Blagojevich once highlighted as part of his efforts to end corruption in state government. The employees, Don DeFrades and Michael Casey, had been managers under the governor when an internal probe determined they were skirting hiring rules to help politically connected people get state jobs. They both argued they were only following orders from officials higher up in the Blagojevich administration. A Sangamon County judge ruled last month that a personnel hearing on the matter was mishandled. The ruling allowed DeFrades and Casey to go back to work. The decision not to appeal also means they'll be able to keep about $200,000 in back pay. The governor's hiring practices remain under scrutiny from federal prosecutors. I'm Sean Crawford.
A former Champaign County board member and current auditor says the county is spending too much on hiring outside nurses for the county nursing home. Tony Fabry says it's happened before, and the county brought the yearly bill for nursing contractors down to $80,000 4 years ago. But Fabry, who's also the county Democratic chairman, says the cost has ballooned to nearly $900,000 this year, and the county board will be asked to pay about $400,000 of it Thursday. Or rather, this evening. Fabry suggests there are ways to once again cut the need for the substitutes.
The nursing home is required to have so many nurses available per patient, and when you have nurses that call in sick or you just have gaps in the schedule, it's a lot easier to just call an agency and have them send someone over. The problem is you have to pay that agency for that service.
Fabry, who faces an election challenge next year, says the nursing home administration could work with staff and the union on a solution. But he doesn't like a proposal to have a private consultant run nursing home operations, something nursing home administrator Andrew Buffenbarger endorses. Buffenbarger has been unavailable for comment. Even though her husband could be headed to prison, the wife of former Governor George Ryan says they are at peace. Amanda Vinicky has that story.
George and Laura Lynn Ryan were in Springfield to sign copies of the new book, At Home with Illinois Governors, about the Illinois Executive Mansion. Laura Lynn Ryan helped complete it. George Ryan, who's been convicted of government corruption, refused to answer reporters' questions. Mrs. Ryan spoke only briefly to reporters.
I'm telling you, I my conscience is clear, and so is George's, so we get on with our life.
She says when you're right with the Lord, she doesn't think too much bad can happen to you. George Ryan was found guilty last year of steering state contracts to cronies and using taxpayer money for his campaigns. Ryan is now trying for a second time to get a judicial panel to rule a mistrial. His first such appeal was denied in August. He remains free, awaiting a decision. I'm Amanda Vinicky.
Illinois high school students are invited to try their hand at reciting poetry. A national program sponsored by the National Endowment for the Arts and the Poetry Foundation encourages students to learn about poetry through memorization and performance. It's called the 2008 Poetry Out Loud National Recitation Contest. Students will compete in the school and state levels to try and qualify for the national competition in Washington, D.C. in April. Teachers interested in the program should visit www.poetryoutloud.org. For the latest newscast online, go to wiol.uiuc.edu/news. This is the AM 580 News Daily Podcast. I'm Jeff Bossert. Earlier this week in our series, World War II, Central Illinois Stories, we heard about a camp in the town of Hoopston, Illinois, that housed German prisoners of war brought in for work duty. Today we hear from a retired farmer, an American serviceman who experienced prison life on the other side. AM 580's Tom Rogers talked with him.
When Kurt Campbell was drafted into the Army, he wanted to join the cadets at Rantoul's Chanute Air Force Base. That idea was shot down because he couldn't remain conscious long enough at high altitude without oxygen. Yet Campbell still went up on bombing missions over Europe as a waste gunner in a B-17 Flying Fortress. His eighth mission would be his last. His crew's plane went down over the Netherlands into the Zuider Zee.
When I came to, his arms, legs, and water, it didn't even seem like there was a floor in the radio room. And I hung on with one hand and tossed nine guys out of the thing, or helped them out. I stepped in my hand and I was thinking I was throwing them out, but... So then when it came my time to get out, I couldn't lift myself, so I really screeched at the people to pull. And we got in this 2 5-man dinghies, and here we watched the plane. It took a real nice dive, very gracefully, and into the water, and she was gone. And so there we are. What are we going to do? We're mad. We're wet. We're hurting. Back was hurting me.
They asked friend or foe when a boat came to their rescue. It was the foe, the Germans. After time in an Amsterdam jail, Kurt Campbell and his crewmates were taken in a boxcar to Stalag 17B in Austria. The food there was meager. There was little to do. And according to a report from military intelligence, treatment there ranged from not good to brutal. In April of 1945, the brutality worsened. Prisoners were forced to march nearly 300 miles away from the advancing Eastern Front.
What we had to eat there was, I won't say nothing, but we probably had something. And it was in this woods, and so they had a nice bonfire going to keep warm, and it rained, and it poured, and it snowed. And pretty soon we started going blind and found out that we had the tar off of the smoke of the pine trees was making a film over your eyes, so we had to back away from the stove.
Eventually, a month later, a U.S. unit intercepted them. Campbell remembers a transport arriving to take them to a camp in France for liberated prisoners. It was called Camp Lucky Strike.
They let a board down, and this guy got in, and I don't know where they landed near Lucky Strike. How we got from where the plane landed to Lucky Strike, I don't remember that. But they had a line there, and the guy was giving out juice. This or this, and I'll take one of each. And so he reached under the table and gave me a mixed can. And they didn't feed us hardly anything. And I guess that was the wise thing. I mean, they fed us often, but not much at a time.
Just to try to regain your regain your strength.
By that time, my belly was already full from them rations I got. Anyway, I don't remember how we got from Camp Lucky Strike to get on a boat. And I suppose a Lucky Strike, 10 days maybe, I don't know. And they fed us real good and was real careful about letting us have too much. So then I get on a boat and they give us some money, so I bought a box of candy, and then I was sick all the way home.
But Campbell was free. What he brought back, aside from memories, was a pair of gloves that he put together because there wasn't much else to do in the camp. He made them from a sweater that came through the Red Cross.
Well, I unraveled a sweater from a lady in Kentucky. I didn't keep the name of the lady. So I unrolled it and put it in a nice ball. And then this guy taught me how to knit. And I've done a pair of socks and this pair of gloves. And one of the gloves I lost in my courting days, but it still fits if I can find it.
So you're wearing your POW gloves on dates.
They're red. Those
have been really good.
It was two different colors even. And people, girls see that, and they said, I don't know how in the world you done it. But the lady had her name up there on the back, no tag on the back of it, and she was from Kentucky. It'd been nice if I could have kept that thing, and maybe some way I could have found out where she lived or some way, somehow.
Kurt Campbell believes that only three of his B-17 crewmates are still alive, but he was fortunate to have reunited with them back in 1971. And a few years later, they assembled at his farm northeast of Hoopston near the Indiana border. And after decades of keeping the story to himself, Campbell wrote down his memoirs and occasionally speaks to groups about his time behind enemy lines, just so no one forgets. I'm Tom Rogers, AM 580 News.
You can hear and read more World War II stories from Central Illinois on our website, will.uiuc.edu. In the forecast for the region today, mostly sunny skies, the high 88, mostly clear this evening, the low 62, mostly sunny skies tomorrow with a high around 90, clear tomorrow evening, the low 63, for Saturday, mostly sunny, a high 88 degrees, clear skies Saturday evening, the low 63. This has been the AM 580 News Daily Podcast for Thursday, September 20th. You can find podcasts of Focus 580, the afternoon magazine, agricultural programming, as well as other helpful information at our website, will.uiuc.edu. I'm Jeff Bossert, AM 580 News.